I mean, here's a guy that criticizes everybody, whoever they take. He's got the answers to who you should take and who you shouldn't take. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. He's in our papers 2 days ago telling us who we have to take.
Welcome back to the First Team NFL Draft and College Football Podcast. We are just 2 weeks away from the 2024 NFL Draft officially kicking off. And we have to bring in, obviously, a lot of great players along the way, but obviously some great insiders as well. So we have ESPN NFL Draft college football analyst and insider, Mr. Jordan Reed. He's been on the show before, seen his ascension over the last couple years with the Draft Network previously. Has been absolute fantastic if you are a Draft Nick out there. Jordan, appreciate you for joining the show, man. Congratulations on the continued success and just really appreciate your time today, man.
No problem, Ryan. It's always great when I get those random messages for you just because I know it's draft time and you're the renaissance, man. You're doing all these interviews and doing the Notre Dame recruiting stuff. I see you doing so many different things on my timeline. So congrats to you on all your success too, and just how versatile you are is something to definitely look up to.
Hey, man, you got to put food on the table for the kids, as I know you understand that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. Well, I really appreciate it. Again, only a couple weeks away. I know you have a ton of TV spots, radio hits, I'm sure, and just kind of continuing the grind over the last couple weeks. I know you guys just put out a nice intel piece on just some kind of, you know, team thoughts on, you know, kind of leading up to draft day in a couple weeks. So definitely want you to be able to plug that at some point. But I wanted to start you out because you were on SportsCenter earlier. You're on Get Up Today. You're everywhere right now. And one key thing that you were talking about that I know you posted on Twitter earlier as well, and I know that obviously, I watched it live, was you just at one player that I feel like has kind of gotten that like analysis paralysis at this point is Marvin Harrison Jr. Because we've just been talking about him for so long. And I feel like some people have kind of dipped expectations on him a little bit. Sometimes some people have maintained obviously the high expectation and the high opinion of him. You said today, best player in the draft. So I want to just kind of start it off there. The special talent and prospect that Marvin Harrison Jr. is, if you could just expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, you being a guy that follows college football very closely, the funny thing that I always find out is that the earlier a player is more successful in college, the more we nitpick them as draft prospects. I don't know why it works out like that. This happened with Kyle Hamilton a few years ago. It's happened with plenty of other players in the past. It happened with Trevor Lawrence a little bit, too, when he was coming out a few years ago, too. So the earlier players are, the earlier they are, the better they are in college, the earlier they are. It just seems like when it comes draft time, we just find holes to pick in these guys. I'm not saying that Marvin Harrison Jr. is a perfect prospect, but when you're talking about an elite, elite type of talent at wide receiver that's dominated college football over the past 2 or 3 years, I mean, he's as good as it gets. It's not only that, but he has the NFL DNA with his father. He has that buttoned up business-like mentality. And at 6'3 or 6'4, 205 to 210 pounds, he's everything that you want at the position. But what makes me so confident in his evaluation, Ryan, is that it's no secret. Ohio State's quarterback play was very subpar last year, and that's putting it very nicely. Everybody in the stadium knew where the ball was going to go, and that was to number 18, no matter what game that you turn on, and he was still able to produce. So that's why I'm so confident in this evaluation and why I'm such a big fan of Marvin Harrison Jr., why I think he's the best player in the draft.
Yeah, well, I think that production matters so much, especially when guys like Emeka Egbuka is banged up throughout most of the year too, right? And you still know the ball's going 18. Like, you know where the ball's going every play, and the continued production, like you said, you know, he's such a rare player for me, Jordan, because it's like I watch him and I see the qualities of what his dad was, right? Like the nuance, the route running, but he's in a 6'3 frame compared to a 6 foot, 188 pound frame that his dad is. I mean, just as such a special mix of those traits, right? Like, we don't typically see a 6'3 guy, 6'3 plus guy that can get in and out of breaks and understands how to attack leverage. I mean, I feel like that's kind of a big thing that really sets him apart, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's a big wide receiver with small wide receiver movement skills. That's the best way that I can put it with him. I mean, he's really good. He's very flexible. The hand-eye coordination is elite. The ability to win with competitiveness and be competitive at the catch point, I think, is outstanding. I mean, there's just not a lot of boxes that he does not check. And I know a lot of people talk about the yards after the catch with him and all those other things, which is fair. Yep. I completely understand that. But when we're talking about the other things that factor into the equation with him, I think he's an elite talent.
So let me ask you, because me and my buddy were actually having a conversation about a Buffalo Bills team that with Stephon Diggs now getting traded to the Houston Texans, they were already a team at pick number 28 that needed a wide receiver. You know, I feel like we kept mocking guys like A.D. Mitchell to him consistently throughout this process. Now that, and I'm going to use the Buffalo Bills as an example because like they're the clearest one as far as you're back in the first rounds, back deeper there, but you have such a massive wide receiver need. My question for you around Marvin Harrison is he a rare enough player, in your opinion, a rare enough wide receiver that we could see maybe, it doesn't even have to be the Buffalo Bills necessarily, but we could see a Julio Jones-esque trade where someone gives up a bunch of capital for an atypical position, right? Like usually the quarterback's the guys that are going to move up more for than a wide receiver typically, but is he a special enough player to mortgage multiple draft picks to potentially get up and get a guy like Marvin Harrison?
I think Marvin is a special talent, but if I were a GM, I just wouldn't do it just because, and I'll just speak on the Buffalo Bills standpoint. If I were Brandon Bean, I would look to take a page out of what the Green Bay Packers have done and then also the Pittsburgh Steelers, just because if I'm so confident in Josh Allen, he should be able to uplift and grow with some young receivers. And I put this in our intel piece today. If somebody is there that you like at 28, fine, take them. But you already have 10 picks. They potentially could trade up just because the Bills have a loaded roster. They don't have a lot of roster spots for that many rookies. But if I'm Brandon Bean, I would look to move around a bit. Why not go and get two day two picks and take somebody like, just naming random names, Xavier Leggett and Javon Baker. Why not double dip on two receivers as opposed to trading up for somebody like Marvin? And I love Marvin, but I just don't think it would be wise for them. I would rather trade back, especially already having such an expensive quarterback like Josh Allen. Let's go ahead and trust his talent to uplift and grow with that wide receiver core, similar to what we saw with Jordan Love and a lot of the receivers that they have taken over the past few years. And we saw how quickly they were able to gain some chemistry. So just imagine taking two day two wide receivers and allowing them to grow with Khalil Shakir and then also Josh Allen as well. So I think it would be a little bit smarter for them to potentially trade back and collect two day two wide receivers or just take one at the back end of the first round. I mean, there's going to be plenty of guys there.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all of your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for 50% off your first deposit. That is a 50% welcome bonus. Bet online where the game starts.
Yeah, another seems like historically deep wide receiver class that we've had in like four of the last 5 years, it feels like, right? Like you just keep kind of pumping about a little bit. I can't have you on without talking quarterbacks a little bit, right? Obviously, with your background and being a former college quarterback yourself. So I wanted to ask, because we've kind of pinpointed the teams that we feel like are going to be in the quarterback market, obviously, right? Chicago Bears, Washington Commanders, Minnesota Vikings, obviously getting extra capital so they can trade up. You know, do the Denver Broncos make a move up? Do the Las Vegas Raiders like someone out there, you know, at pick number 13? Do New England Patriots pull the trigger? Do they trade back at three? My question for you is that I feel like most people, and this is always true, is that it is such an interesting topic of quarterback evaluation because fit matters so much, right? Like what system you go to, what coach you go to, what offensive system, like so many things dictate early success for quarterbacks, right? And sometimes that sinks or swims guys and we know what happens from there. My question is that Minnesota has been a team that we've kind of pointed to as a collective as far as like, that's a pretty quarterback friendly situation to be in. You have a great pass catcher in Justin Jefferson. You have an emerging one in Jordan Addison. You have two offensive tackles that are very talented, obviously with Christian Darrisaw, Brian O'Neill, and then you have Kevin O'Connell as the head coach, de facto offensive coordinator. My question for you is of the other quarterback needy teams, are there a couple or one or two that you would say is an underrated spot that you actually think is a quarterback friendly situation for a player in a rookie going into obviously the rest of his career?
This is always the most challenging thing to figure out, honestly, just because when I'm doing these 7-round mock drafts, the hardest part is really to find landing spots for quarterbacks, just because every year there's a random one that pops up that nobody's seen coming. For example, last year, nobody saw Stetson Bennett going to the Rams in the 4th round. And then I don't think anybody saw Sean Clifford getting drafted at all. I didn't have him in my 7-round mock. I don't know if you did a 7-rounder, but I'm sure you didn't include
Sean. I did not. I also didn't have Ian. I didn't have Ian Book in the 4th round to the New Orleans Saints a couple years ago either. Yeah, that always happens.
Another great example. So there's always random guys that do end up getting drafted, but there really isn't, I would say, an underrated spot in this year's draft, just because the obvious ones are Chicago and Minnesota, of course. It doesn't take a genius to figure those out. And I wouldn't really declare Las Vegas as underrated, just because everybody knows they're going to be in search of a quarterback too. And Denver is another obvious spot too. So there isn't really a super underrated one, but if I were running this team, I would look to draft a quarterback somewhere on day 2 or day 3, and that's New Orleans. Just because I don't think Derek Carr is the long-term answer there. He just continues to decline, in my opinion. And for whatever reason, I just don't understand the end goal in New Orleans. It just seems like a team that's just swimming in mediocrity to me. So they don't have a 3rd or 4th round pick, which is unfortunate. But in the 2nd or even the 5th round, you know, take somebody like Spencer Rattler. That is a little bit high for Rattler, but just naming a random quarterback, taking Spencer in the 2nd, and then maybe Michael Pratt in the 5th round, somebody like that, the 5th or the 6th round, just once again, naming random quarterbacks that they could select. So if I were naming an underrated spot that potentially could randomly take a quarterback, I think New Orleans definitely is one.
Kind of a follow-up on quarterbacks, because we've kind of had penciled in at this point, you know, potentially 4 quarterbacks going in the top 10, you know, obviously with Caleb Williams and Drake May and Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy and that buzz that's over there. My question is, of the next quarterback, whether you have Bo Nix or Michael Penix, you know, whoever the next quarterback is for you personally, how high do you think is the right spot to draft either one of those players? Like, what is the preferred range for quarterback 5, in your opinion, in this draft?
Well, I have a day 2 grade on both of those guys, and I wouldn't feel comfortable taking either in the 1st round, honestly, just because, and I get the love affair with Nix. I completely understand it, but I just don't know how much left there is to uncover with Bo Nix as far as his ceiling and his potential. And then with Penix, you have to factor in the durability, the lack of mobility. And then once again, him being an older type of prospect as well, you want him playing right away so you can maximize the value on the rookie contract if he goes in the 1st or the 2nd round, wherever it may be. So I wouldn't feel comfortable taking either one of those guys in the 1st round. Honestly, I would feel a little bit more comfortable taking them in the 2nd or even the 3rd round.
That's fair. Well, and my favorite part of draft season every year, and it's why I look at when you release a big board or someone else I respect releases a big board, I like to kind of compare, you know, like, who am I higher on than the consensus? Who am I lower on? So let's start with the positive one, the players that you might be higher on. You give me 1 or 2 guys that you feel like, compared to the consensus, you kind of favor a little bit more.
Yeah, I had to dwindle down my list, man, because I have so many guys that I'm high on. But I want to talk about one that's probably going to fire you up, and that's Cam Hart. Okay. The corner of Notre Dame. So my first exposure to Cam. So throughout the fall, I go to games in the Southeast. I primarily stay in the Southeast. So I was at the Notre Dame game when they came to NC State. I live in Charlotte, so I wanted to make sure to get over. So I saw Notre Dame had a ton of guys that were on my list this year. Cam Hart definitely was one of them. But the size, Ryan, like, he's every bit of 6'2.5", 210 pounds. The big worry or the big question about him coming into the year was just the injuries with the shoulders. Yes. Could he hold up? Could he eventually take that next step? Everybody in the world knew that he was athletic and he had the technique to play on the next level. I had him as a day 3 guy coming into the year just because of the shoulders. You didn't know if they were eventually going to hold up. But I'm watching him throughout that game, and then I'm tracking him throughout the season. And I'm like, man, everything's really starting to click for him. Mm-hmm. He was able to stay healthy. He had arguably, I would say, his best year of his career. And then you factor in the size, and then also he absolutely killed the combine. I was really impressed with him at the combine, the way he was able to test. So I have a 2nd round grade on him. I would look to draft him in the middle to late 2nd round. He can play zone. He can play man. He's just so scheme versatile. He's really good as a tackler too. So I'm really high on Cam Hart. I like him quite a bit. And then my other is Christian Haynes, who's a guard out of UConn. He's another that I didn't know a whole bunch about coming into the year, but I'm looking at the NC State game, which is the one that really caught my eye early on in the season. There were plenty of others that I was really intrigued by earlier in the season, and he's only played right guard during his entire career, but he played a little center at the Senior Bowl, which I thought was a huge checkbox that he was able to answer at the Senior Bowl. So I think it could be a center or a guard. I look at somebody like the Miami Dolphins in the middle of the second round, the Pittsburgh Steelers in the middle of the second round, where he can be a plug and play guard or a center. So those are two guys that I'm definitely super high on.
And it's funny, Jordan, because I always feel like we use things as verification. Like you mentioned Cam Hart's testing and for, you know, a 4.5 flat, I think 39.5 inch vert, you know, a 10-10 broad, like some really good numbers, obviously. Christian Haynes was another guy, though, comparative to those players that were at the Senior Bowl, right, and had very good weeks. I mean, I remember Cam. I mean, I felt like he took Tez Walker's lunch money that week. Like he had a really tough week against Cam. How important is that process, just like kind of picking your brain on the scouting side, of being able to see guys transition good film into an environment where they're uncomfortable, like the Senior Bowl, another one where they're uncomfortable, like the Combine? Like, how important is every facet of this process for you?
Well, there's a lot of layers and variables to that question. But just speaking from Cam Hart's standpoint, you want to be able to see how scheme versatile he is. How does he take NFL coaching? And then how does he adjust to the different receivers that he's going against? So how does he adjust from going against Johnny Wilson to Tez Walker? Those little bit of changeups like that. And then also, is he more comfortable in man? Is he more comfortable in zone? How competitive is he? Is he one of those guys that I love seeing corners that are what I call rah-rah guys? So your Jair Alexanders, your Jalen Ramsey types, just because half the battle as a corner to succeeding on the next level is having confidence. If you're not confident as a corner, I'm going to immediately take you off my board, just because if you're not confident at that position, I think corner, outside of tackle and quarterback, I think is by far the hardest position to transition to in the NFL, just because you're literally transitioning backwards while somebody is running full speed at you. So you have to have that confidence and then also the athleticism. And then from Christian Haynes' standpoint, just how does he adjust to that competition level? Just because at UConn, you're not playing higher end type of competition week in and week out. And then also we talked a little bit earlier about the positional flexibility. He's only played right guard during his time at UConn. And we both know a lot of linemen have difficulties when they switch from right guard to left guard, right tackle to left tackle, or even playing center, especially if he's never snapped before. So those little nuggets are something that I'm always looking to collect, and I thought he adjusted really well.
And on the other side of the coin now, is there a player or two that you would say, just compared to the consensus? And again, like, this doesn't mean that you don't think they're not going to be a really good football player on the next level. It's just comparative to what the buzz is now. Is there a player or two that you would say you're just a little bit lower on than what the consensus currently is?
Yeah, and I'll keep this at two. The first one is Tyler Guyton of Oklahoma. Yeah. It's a deep offensive tackle class, but I just don't think the traits are off the charts with him without question, but the consistency and then just the lack of physicality and moments with him is something that I just wish there was a little bit more with him. Sure. And the Texas game got me fired up about him. I think that was by far his best game on tape without question. But throughout the season, I just thought he was really inconsistent and in spurts. And there's a lot of hoping and wishing eventually with him. Eventually, I hope he turns into this. Eventually, I hope he gets this. So there's a lot of hoping and wishing with Tyler Guyton. And then the other is Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who's a linebacker from Clemson. There's some spatial things I worry about with him. He's really good moving forward as far as a blitzer and when plays are in front of him. But I thought a lot of teams, and I saw him three times this year up close, I thought teams really targeted him in space. And I thought that's where he did struggle a little bit. And he is a little bit undersized too. And then him not doing the agilities that worried me a lot. It may lead to some breadcrumbs as far as, you know, his numbers not being where up to par with some of his counterparts. So I worry about him in space. So I think he's going to go a little bit later than what some people are projecting right now. But those are two guys that I'm definitely lower on.
Gotcha. Well, my last question for you, Jordan, is I wanted to ask you about this before, but if you go to your Twitter, right, at Jordan_Reed on Twitter, for people that aren't following him, by the way, the pinned tweet that you have on top is one that is super cool, because you now get to work with Mel Kiper Jr., who, folks, whether you agree with Mel's takes or you don't agree with Mel's takes, he's the godfather of draft coverage, man. What's it been like, just in your brief time here at ESPN so far, being able to work with someone like Mel Kiper and others that you respect so much at that level?
You know, Ryan, it's an indescribable feeling, just because I was that kid that grew up back when the draft was 2 days long, if you remember. I sat in front of the TV watching Kiper and McShay and watching them argue back and forth, just because I've always loved the draft. Like, it's just something about team building that I love. And then also seeing these players with their helmets on and their helmets off and just figuring out exactly who they are. So the draft is something that I've always loved, but I always say everybody had a favorite athlete or musician that they idolized growing up. Mel Kiper was that guy growing up for me. I always wanted to be Mel. And the first day that I actually got hired at ESPN, there's this long random number that pops up, and it's actually Mel. So a little bit about Mel. Mel does not have a cell phone, but he has like five house phones. Everything goes through his house phone for whatever reason. I don't know why Mel doesn't have a cell phone, but he has like five landlines that go through his house. So whenever you call Mel, you have to leave a voicemail and he calls you back. So Mel actually called me that day, and I wasn't able to get to the phone just because I had a lot of stuff going on. But I end up calling him back and I leave him a voicemail, and it's Mel Kiper on the voicemail. I'm like, oh my God. So Mel calls me back from the same number, and we actually talk for like 2 hours. And it's just like, I can't, the whole time I'm on the phone, I'm just like, man, I'm really talking to Mel Kiper Jr. And just to tell you a little bit about Mel, the same way Mel is on TV is the same way he talks on the phone. So he's absolutely fired up, but I'm just enjoying every single second of it. But with Mel, like, our conversation went to our backgrounds, to him talking about LeVar Arrington coming out of Penn State. And this is our very first time talking on the phone. So that's just the type of guy that Mel is. He's a mentor to me. I can call him anytime now. And I mean, he's an encyclopedia of information. I just can't. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame to me. Like, I will go to my grave vouching for that. That's how valuable Mel has been to the NFL. And there is no draft without Mel. I gush about him every chance I get a chance to talk about him.
Yeah. I mean, you're 100% correct. Like, you would not have the job you have without Mel Kiper. I would not be doing what I'm doing without Mel Kiper. There's no doubt about that. The man is a pioneer in the industry. Jordan, I mentioned it briefly. You mentioned it briefly as well. I know there's a big Intel piece right now on ESPN, kind of giving a little bit of insight into draft needs and stuff. Anything, though, that you would like to plug real quick? Anything you have coming up kind of leading to draft day?
So I have my final 7-round mock draft coming out April 23rd. Nice. So be on the lookout for that. And then also the week following the draft, I've already started watching 2025, guys. I can't believe it, just because I have our 2025 mock this year. And I like putting first round worthy names that are worthy of being in there. And there may or may not be a certain Notre Dame corner in there. Just a little bit of peek behind the curtain. So that's a little bit into my life right now.
I love it. Again, Jordan_Reed, capital J, capital R on Twitter, if you are on, or X, I guess, whatever you want to call it now. Jordan, I really appreciate it, man. Again, I cannot say this enough. It has been an absolute pleasure to see your rise in the industry, man. And thank you so much, as always, for just giving me a little bit of time, man. It's always very much appreciated. Happy draft season, man. Thank you for joining the show today.
No problem. Thanks, as always, and happy draft season to you too, buddy.